What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom. Busy lives with limited resources mean we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and use only today's best strategies and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journey of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. If you are enjoying these episodes, listen until the end or check out the show notes to hear four ways in which you can support this podcast to keep it ad-free. In this episode, I'm chatting with Ryan Lawson about how after 20 years in ministry and many years of side hustles, he found himself learning and mastering the skill of sales. We'll dive into how reading books and shadowing a mentor in his spare time in air quotes, led him to switch gears in his life and go all in with a boutique sales consultancy called Master Messaging. So let's not waste any more time and hop into this conversation with Ryan now.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity to jump on here and so appreciate the opportunity to speak with your audience. And I was just telling a guy today, I so respect the side hustle. I was talking to a guy today who had three different jobs. He's a realtor, he's a home inspector, and he's a fireman. And we were just bonding over that, just like, man, so respect the side hustle, people who are taking their financial situation into their own hands. So yeah, so my deal starts years and years back when I started my first full-time job career, and it was a career in ministry. I actually ended up going to a seminary type deal with our church planning group we were with. Spent about 3 years doing that, stepped into full-time ministry, and almost immediately recognized that I would not have the income I needed in ministry to do the things I wanted to do in life. And so I've said it for years, man, I have a champagne taste on a beer budget. And so what I've been working for is the champagne budget. I mean, that's really, really what I've been going for. And so that was way back in 2000, maybe even 1999. I just recognized, man, if I'm going to buy a house, if I'm going to provide things for my new wife and kids that were going to be on the way, man, I'm going to have to make some money outside of what I can do in ministry. And so the first thing that I stepped into, my first side hustle, it was a guy at our church. He approached me. So it wasn't my idea. He approached me. And what I've been doing, I had been creating our church bulletins and things like overheads and graphics. I mean, using like just garbage imaging software, like the old Microsoft Word Art or something. And a guy in our church, he was like a 28-year graphic designer, saw some of the stuff I was putting out. And he just pulled me aside in a conversation sometime. And he said, hey, what are you creating this stuff with? And I told him, I said, Microsoft, like Word Art. And he's like, wow. He goes, because that's just total garbage. He said, if you had the tools and I think some training and mentoring, you could have a really, you could have a really good side income working for me. So that's how the whole thing started. So I jumped in that thing, both feet, all in. I went out and the first thing I did was buy like some smoking computers, some great software. I attended some training events and I started working with this guy in our church, and his whole deal was just to mentor me in how to do graphic design and things like that. And so I'm about a year into that process, making a lot of progress. I'm able to generate the stuff that I see in my head and do the creative thing. But at this point, all I did is spend money. I hadn't made any yet. Yeah. Yeah. So I think some side hustle folks understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then he came to me and he said, this is my mentor. He said, hey, listen, you know, I had this whole position kind of worked out for you, but there's been a shift in my business. I'm not gonna be able to hire you. And so, man, I'm not gonna lie. I was totally bummed because I'm like $5,000 in debt that I was carrying on a credit card. I'd spent all this time and energy learning this profession and now I had nowhere to practice it. So this is where my side hustle was born. It was probably 2000. I'd been doing this for about a year. And so I just said, hey, I can do the work. I have the equipment. I'm going to go out there and get the business. And so I started rattling every tree I could, everyone I knew, people in my network. I started telling them, hey, I do graphic design. Hey, I do brochures and flyers and logos. And it started as a trickle at first, a couple people here, a couple people there. I started marketing myself almost exclusively by word of mouth and got my first few clients in 2000.
Just by calling people already in your network?
Yep. Just friends, family, coworkers, friends of friends. I printed up some business cards and that was a thing back in 2000. I know it's not much of a thing today. Half the people I talk to don't even have business cards. Back in the day, that's what you did. You passed out business cards. So I had like 1,000 business cards and I passed out hundreds of them. And I got a little bit of side work. And it was piddly stuff, you know, a couple hundred bucks here, a couple hundred bucks there, but it was income. And so I was grateful to have it. And that led to my new clients referring me to their business associates and their friends and their family. And I looked up probably around, I want to say about 2003, about 3 years into that deal. And I had a legit side hustle. I had a legit side business. And so I was probably pulling in 20, 30 grand a year doing that.
And this was just you, no help, no subcontracting out or nothing?
Just me. And like I said, it started with like logos and brochures and flyers. And somehow, some way, I ended up doing website designs. And then I got into corporate identities and picking out like color schemes and totally self-educated. I mean, I was just constantly reading books, you know, doing any kind of open source training I could. I would go out and I spent a significant amount of money on certifications and trainings and things like Photoshop and Illustrator. But man, I was working to build my capability. But here's one thing I'll tell you is when someone would come to me and say, hey, can you do this? It didn't matter the next thing that left their mouth. I just said yes. And now if they ever ask for, hey, where have you done this before? That's where things would get a little messy. And I just flat out tell them, I've never actually done that, but I know I can do it. And it's,
do you have an example of when that happened? Did that, was there any like thing that stood out?
Yeah, maybe the biggest disaster of my life. I had a guy come to me and he said, hey, I know you've done some signage. And I had been designing signage for realtors and real estate developers and even a construction company. And I designed their signage and I worked real closely with a sign manufacturer. And this guy said, hey, I know you've done some signage. Can you do signage for a hotel? And so guess what my answer was? It was, yeah, sure, no problem. No idea what I was getting into. I mean, no idea. And I had been doing just wood signs, plywood and post type signs like that. I had even done a couple architectural signs for like neighborhoods and mainly just the design. And then I'd hand it to a sign company. They'd quote it, blam, we're off to the races. But this guy came to me about this hotel. I said, sure, man. Yeah, no problem. And I knew I was in trouble, man. I got down. It was down in Buckhead. And there's this big hotel. I'm not going to say which one it was. But there's this big hotel and I meet with the hotel owner and he's like, hey, I want you to do all this wayfinding signage in our parking lot. Everything's lighted. It's all lighted signs and electrical. And hey, we have this big, beautiful awning on front of the hotel. I want you to design a sign for that. We have this 30-foot pylon sign out in front of the hotel. And I want you to design that. And I'm like, okay. And a couple of people close to me, they warned me. They said, you have no idea what you're getting into, bro. Like, maybe you should say no. And I'm like, no, I got it. No big deal. So we went through. But here was my big here was my big warning that I totally ignored. Our first, I'm about a year and a half into the business. My very first meeting with a client was on 9/11/2001, the day the Twin Towers came down. And I'm down in Buckhead while this is happening, meeting with the client. And it was total pandemonium and chaos. And, you know, people thought our country was under attack. And so they were leaving high-rise buildings. And so all of the people in the hotel came rushing out of the hotel, and they were filling the streets thinking that all high-rise buildings were under attack. It was total pandemonium, total chaos. I should have known, like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't do this job, but man, we proceeded, and the whole thing was a complete and total disaster. And it had nothing to do with the signs that I designed. It was the company that I hired to install the signs. Ended up installing the signs the wrong way. They actually put up one of the signs that we contracted them to build. They put up the wrong sign in the wrong location. And worst call of my life, I got a call from that hotel owner the next morning. He says, "Hey, Ryan, these signs, that they're beautiful. They're just not the ones I ordered."
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one didn't go so well, but man, I'm not going to lie. I tried everything. I said yes to everything. It was all about, you know, making that side money. That job alone, I lost $12,000 on that job.
Wow.
I lost. Came out of my pocket. I didn't have the money because I was a broke guy working in ministry. So it went on a company credit line. That was brutal. That was absolutely brutal.
Do you recommend, like, in retrospect, is your position still to tell people, like, hey, yeah, take on, if you get the opportunity to take it on, figure it out, or do you have a different stance now?
You know, I still have the yes, we can do that mentality.
Yeah.
Here's the biggest thing I would change about the way I did it back then is I would mitigate my risk. And so I would still say yes today, but I wouldn't be on the hook for it financially and get myself in over my head financially where I can't afford it. So I would have done things like I would have had insurance and I would have been bonded and things like that. So I could have called the insurance company when my client came to me and said, "We need to buy a new sign and you're going to pay for it." So I'm still all about, I mean, to this day, it's yes, we can do that. And in fact, at our company today, we're a boutique sales consultancy. And we got an opportunity late last year with a Fortune 150 company. And it was 10 times bigger than anything we had ever looked at. And when we got the call, "Can you bid on this project?" The answer was yes,
of
absolutely. Absolutely. Don't say no to the opportunity. So,
no, so, I'm with you on that. I'm with you.
Yeah. And the people who are working their side hustle, they get that. It's all about, hey, man, these are already entrepreneurial types who are going to, you know, jump on every opportunity as it comes by.
Yeah, I think it's a lot about having confidence in yourself, right? Yeah, I can figure this out. I can do it. I'll figure out how to make it do it. I'll outsource it. I'll something.
Well, I'll say this: in 2001, I didn't have the resources available to me now that people do today, or I didn't have the resources available then that people do today. I mean, you can learn almost anything on YouTube now,
yeah.
But back in the day, it was who do you know. Right? Who can help you out? So that whole chapter, I ran the wheels off that business, and I basically had a side hustle while working another full-time job for a solid 12 years. And, wow. 2012 kept that rolling, gained clients, retained clients, found a good niche for me to do the work I was doing. But, you know, honestly, one of the biggest challenges that I faced beyond the making mistakes financially and getting myself in over my head financially, it was a time thing. And because I had a very demanding 40, 50 hour a week job, and I was doing this thing every bit of 40, 50 hours a week as well. So, I've lived the grind hustle life of out of bed.
Was that tough on your family when you were pulling 80 hour weeks?
It was really tough. It was really tough. I didn't show a lot of what I'd recognize today, now that I'm 41, wisdom. I didn't show a lot of wisdom, man. I was chasing the dream, which is, you know, financial independence, but I was doing so without a lot of thought to the collateral damage of throwing 80 hours and being married and having kids. And so I really got a picture of where that went wrong around 2000, probably around 2004, 2005. And I made some pretty serious course corrections to my side hustle. And I limited the amount of hours that I would work. And I started getting pretty selective about the clients that I would take on. In fact, I had to go to all of my clients after, about five years being in the business. And I was just very honest with them. And I said, hey, listen, from here on out, it's going to take me about twice as long to do the work that you guys are asking me to do. And it's going to cost twice as much. And so I lost some clients when I did that repositioning, but the clients that I kept and the clients that I added after that were great clients.
Yeah, your dream clients probably didn't have as many headaches. You know, they were okay with you raising the price. I can imagine.
Totally. So yeah, they'd come to me and say, hey, we need you to do a, you know, new flyer. We need a new website. And I'd say, all right. I said, just so you know, every bit, it's going to take me a couple months to get to this. And it's going to be about twice what your last one was. And I said, yeah, that's cool. And that's when I knew I had me a nice little side hustle there.
Yeah.
So that was side hustle number one. And, but I do want to say what I figured out in doing that and running that as hard as I did for as long as I did was the part that I really enjoyed about the side hustle. And it wasn't doing the websites and it wasn't doing the logos and the corporate identities. Honestly, it was the sales process. And that's what I fell in love with. I love identifying prospects. I love finding out, you know, their challenges and their goals and then creating solutions that would help them overcome their challenges and meet their goals and then getting paid for it. And so I started noticing, you know, probably around the same time I edited my schedule, 2004, 2005, I started noticing that the high point of any engagement for me was the sale. It wasn't the delivery. It wasn't, you know, unveiling a new logo or a new website. It was the point of sale. And that's what led me to my second side hustle, the one I'm involved in now.
And what is that the, it's sales based? And before we get into that, I'd like to just comment that everything that you've done was self-taught, right? The graphic design, you taught yourself that. The sales process, you just taught yourself over time. So you didn't have any formal education on any of these.
I didn't go to school for this. I don't have a degree in this. Like I said, I mean, my degree was actually in ministry. That's in my practical education. Was in ministry, but I learned by engaging real life, real world clients and folks that asked me to do something, and I would have to quickly educate myself. And I'll give you an example. I have a client come to me, and I was doing websites at the time. And back in the day, and this might predate a lot of people, but back in the day, man, Flash, Adobe Flash on websites was the business. Everyone wanted a Flash based site. And so I had a client come to me, and they said, man, We've seen these sites, and this is one of my good clients. Can you do one of those for us? And so guess what I told him?
Yeah, sure.
I had never used Flash. I didn't know the first thing about Flash. So the first thing I did was buy Flash, Adobe Flash, and I enrolled in a 2-day Adobe Flash seminar on how to actually learn. And that's what I did. I went to a 2-day seminar. I rolled up my sleeves. I got to work. I spent probably 2 solid weeks, every bit of free time I had, learning how to use the software. And a couple weeks later, delivered a Adobe Flash website to one of my clients. Little did they know, it was the first one I had ever done. They're like, oh man, this is great. It's exactly what we wanted. I said, oh yeah, sure. No problem.
Awesome. So you started moving towards the boutique sales consultancy that you briefly brought up earlier. How did that transpire? How did you, was it somebody like the first time when somebody just came up to you and was like, hey, Ryan, I think you'd be good at this?
No, this one was a little different. I took a very different approach with my second hustle. A good friend of mine who's now my business partner, he had stepped out of a 30 plus year sales career. And he had started doing sales consulting, and he did it for one of the big guys that's out there. And he was maybe a year and a half into that. And he said to himself, he's like, you know, I can do this better than these guys are doing it. I'm going to start my own business. And so he started his own business. I mean, out of nothing. He had a conviction. I can do this. I can do it better than one of the main competitors. And so he quit his job and he started a sales consultancy. And I was maybe one of the first people he told about this. We were sitting out front of a cigar bar that we frequent in Woodstock, Maxwell Cigar Bar. And we're sitting there here in Georgia. Nice, I think it was like a summer or spring afternoon, smoking a cigar. And he says, you know, I just quit my job. I'm going to start a sales consultancy. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Because I had done some sales training for my company. And I said, man, I love that stuff. I love hearing about the psychology of selling and things like that. I said, I'm super interested in the direction that you're going to take here. He goes, well, hey, the first couple workshops I do, you're more than welcome to attend. And so he invited me just to attend. And I went to a couple of his workshops and absolutely geeked out on the content. I just thought, it's fascinating what's going on in someone's brain when you're talking to them in a selling conversation. And so he's teaching this content and he's referencing some books. And I went out and I bought all the books that he referenced. And then the next couple of times we got together, we would just get together and just talk the psychology of sales, the science of human decision and neuroscience, behavioral psychology. And it was a real passion because this is what I had gravitated to in my corporate identity business is the sales process and what's happening and the selling conversations. And so I attended everything he did that first 6-7 months. And every time he gave me an opportunity, every time I could make it work with my schedule, I was there, man. And I came to him December 2012 and I sat him down and maybe bought him a cigar and said, hey, listen, I want to be involved in this. I said, I love what you're doing. I love where you're going. I said, I'll be honest. I don't know how much time I can devote to this, but man, I want to be involved in what you're doing. And he said, man, I need the help. I'd love to have you on in whatever capacity you can give me. And so first thing I did was design a logo for him and work on a website. I did all those things that I could do immediately, but I basically attached myself to his side and it worked my way into the company. I don't even know if I even asked permission. I just said, I want to be a part of this. I'm coming. And he needed the help. So he didn't say no. He didn't say no. So it was very different. Instead of someone coming alongside and saying, you can do this, it was more me saying, man, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
So
what was your first involvement outside of just building the website and creating a logo? Like, how did you start to work yourself in there and kind of provide value in more of the sales capacity?
Yeah. So the opportunity that I saw and where I applied myself in the business was my partner. He's really creative, very intuitive, kind of in a lot of ways. Just I don't want to say fly by the seat of your pants, but he can pull some stuff out of his hip pocket and just kill it. I, on the other hand, I'm a little bit more of a structured process guy, and I saw that workshop to workshop, there wasn't a strong system or process for delivering the training that he was doing at the time. And so I would show up to events, I would take mad notes, I would capture everything that's happening in the room. And then we started getting together after the events with his new clients and talking about, hey, what if you did this? What if you did this? What if you walked them through a sequential process instead of, hey, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this. And basically working together and the way I applied myself in the business was to help him, I think I made up a word, productize this content that he had. He had this great intellectual property, this great content, and I helped him bring some structure and a process to the delivery. And he saw tremendous value there. Wow, this is so helpful. And then I dressed up everything we were doing instead of, sending proposals in Word documents. We started actually putting some graphic touch on mm-hmm. things like PowerPoint presentations and
polished.
Yeah, yeah. So we systematized and brought a process to it and then made it look pretty. And the immediate effect in the business was clients perceived higher value. And so they were willing to pay more. And so his profitability, it went up, and that created some margin to start paying me on the side for the work that I was doing for the company. And honestly, it's our work together over about 5 years went from light suggesting to bringing a system and a process to polishing the thing to eventually creating new products. And we started creating and collaborating, creating new products. I started in a formal capacity, attending events, even delivering some of the training content and corresponding with clients, doing some business development. And man, so five years into it, 5.5 years into it, we formalized, really 5 years into it, we formalized a legit partnership structure where I'm now a partner in the consultancy. And this is now, it's my full-time job. It's what I do now.
When did you make that transition?
That was this year. That was January 2018, went all in on this. And again, from where I started a few hours a week, 2012, 2013, it's grown over the years to, 10 hours a week and then 20 hours a week. And in 2017, I had two pretty much full-time jobs, working in a ministry capacity, 40 plus hours a week, and then working this thing. But it was totally worth it because I knew what was happening. I was laying a foundation for a really good career moving forward.
Was that tough to walk away from the ministry which you'd been involved in for so long?
It was and it wasn't. It was because that's all I had done in my entire 21 year adult life. But at the same time, I had done that for 21 years. And so happy to embrace change. And, I turned 40 last year and I'm like, everyone's having kind of a pseudo midlife crisis. Who am I? Where am I going? And honestly, it was a good thing. It was a really good thing, a real natural progression. It took place over many years. So it wasn't sudden. It was a gradual growth type thing.
Nice. So I kind of want to dive into a little bit of more of the sales stuff to give some value to the listeners on.
Yeah.
Because I would think a lot of the listeners now, they're either selling a widget or they're selling some type of service. And I think a lot of them starting out probably are trying to figure out how they can add value through some type of service type business.
Yeah.
I've talked to many people on here, many of the listeners that are doing various things, and a lot of them are service business space. So with that in mind, just a high level, what is a general sales process look like for a service type business, even like what you guys are doing? What does that general sales process look like?
So, yeah. And I mean, we're in a service business as well. So yeah. I'm real familiar with that space. Maybe the best place to start, or definitely the best place to start, let's put it that way, is to identify your ideal client persona. And this is a picture of the kind of individual, the kind of role, the kind of company that you want. And this is the slot where you do your best work, your client gets the most value, you can make the greatest impact, and it's the most profitable. So those are the components that go into an ideal client profile or ideal client persona, your ICP. And so getting to that, man, that can take some time, and getting that right, it's absolutely worth doing though. And because in both businesses that I've been involved in, that really is the difference between success and failure. I've done a lot of work for people and I've made some impact on their business, but it hasn't been transformative. It hasn't been a great impact. So as a result, the clients aren't willing to pay really what I need to get paid for it to be profitable. And then vice versa, if you could have transformative impact on somebody, but they can't afford you, no one's happy there. So getting to that, getting that persona, that's the first step. And then with that persona in mind, there has to be a strategy for engaging those people where they're at in some kind of prospecting activity, getting in front of them, gaining that first conversation. And so my first business, it was purely word of mouth and networking. That's how we did things. We passed out business cards and told people, hey, we're doing websites. As we've moved into a different client profile here, the lower mid-market companies, these multi-million dollar companies, that doesn't work so well. You have to have a system and a process for engaging those people where they live, where they're at. And so for us, a lot of that activity, it happens on LinkedIn. It happens at networking events here in Atlanta where they actually will be. So things like that. And then,
are there those type of events for even if again, someone was just starting out, are there like local events that they could go to still find these clients?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you identify your ICP as far as networking events, Eventbrite, Meetup, really, that's how I started attending networking events for the people we want to talk to, is just doing a flat out Google search, networking events, salespeople, technology companies. And sure enough, I found there's industry groups for this in pretty much every industry. And that's what we find from engaging our clients as well, is there's a subset for everything. We attended a printing convention in March as one of their workshop speakers. And I had no idea that people who are into printing get together in these massive events. There were several thousand people there, maybe 2,000-3,000 people at this huge, massive event for guys that run print shops. So almost every demographic, they've got some kind of trade show. They've got some kind of in-town networking event. They're out there, and there's forums of these folks. So identifying them and finding where they are.
Do you have, or do you recommend like some type of strategy when you're going to this event? Say you've already identified who your ICP or your avatar or whatever you want to call this ideal customer or client. Do you have some type of strategy when you're going to these events? Like, okay, I want to meet this type of person, or do you not go with an agenda and just try to see who you can rub shoulders with?
Did I mention I'm a system and process guy? Yeah. So I'm not going to attend an event without some kind of agenda. And yeah, it's great to meet up with people I already know and things like that, but they know me well enough to, I'll say hi and be polite, but I'm there to meet people, and I'm there to have conversations with people that there's a possibility that we can do business with. And so that's honestly the thought process that leads to what we do as a sales consultancy. So you're standing in front of, or you're sitting across from, or you have someone on the phone who's your ideal client profile, this avatar, this persona. What do you say? What's the conversation that you have with them to communicate really high value around your products and your services, and to do so in a way that gets their attention? Well, they'll say yes to a more in-depth conversation or coffee or lunch or whatever. And so, once you've identified that profile, once you've found where these people are at, and once you've engaged them, you have to come armed with a conversation from the prospect's point of view that takes into account their goals, their challenges, and the uniqueness that you offer, either through your product or through your service, how you help them overcome their challenges and meet their goals. And so that conversation, I'm not gonna lie to you, man, it's hard for many business professionals to have, even the side hustle folks, because we're neck deep in our products and services, right? And when you're nervous and you're in an uncomfortable situation, where you go is just to talk about yourself. And we like to coach our clients all the time. Hey, your prospect does not care about you, and they don't care about your product, and they don't care about your service. They just want to know, how can you make my life easier? How can you make my life better? And so to build a conversation where you clearly articulate, how will your prospect be better off as a result of doing business with you? That's the key. And so even that very first conversation, you've got to be armed and ready to communicate that. And then
saying in that conversation, you want to be focused on the results that you can get them in that conversation, not a bunch of fluff. It's all about what's the value you can add to them, a results-based conversation. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, results-based, but I want to give a caveat there. Yes, results-based, but it's not just facts and figures. See, and this is one of the portions we teach in our training events. A couple Italian scientists early in the 2000s, about 10, 15 years ago, they proved empirically what salespeople have suspected for a long time, which is that people, human beings, we make decisions based on meaning and emotion, and we justify those decisions with logic and reason. And so it can be a mistake to start with logical or reasonable outcomes, fact-based, factual outcomes. What's more impactful is to speak to the meaning. What does it mean that your prospect can do something better, can do something faster, can do something more efficiently? And asking that question, so what does that mean? Well, asking that a couple times, you'll get to a conversation that has real meaning, and there's some emotion attached when you start talking meaning, as opposed to, because I mean, I could lead every conversation, man, with, hey, listen, one of our clients, their conversion rates and their early stage conversations went from 8 to 47% one quarter using our training. Well, that's great. But what does that mean? What it means to the person I'm talking to is that they kept their job. And what does it mean that you can keep your job? Well, it means you could provide for your family. What does it mean if you can't provide for your family? See, now we're getting down to, this is legit meaning and emotion. And so I would never suggest your listeners to lead a conversation with, if you don't work with me, you're going to lose your job and be homeless on the street, and unable to provide for your family. But you haven't done your homework if you haven't gone to that length in building out this conversation. What does it mean? How will your, and here's a great question that everyone needs to ask and answer before they engage their prospect. How will your client be better off as a result of doing business with you? How will their life be better off? That's the conversation you want to have, not just bits and bytes and feeds and speeds and facts and figures.
No, that's awesome. And I know there's so much content just around these high level topics that we're just skimming over. So I know we're not doing it complete justice, but you know, once you've walked them through this process, you've kind of tugged on these emotion strings. What does the closing process look like? I mean, I think this is where a lot of people may be able to like stumble their way through like the first part, like meeting people and getting them on the phone. But when it comes down to like closing the deal, closing the sale, I feel like that's where people, especially new people in this process, if you're just spinning up a business, something like that, that's the part that you're like, you're scared out of your mind about, because you're like, oh crap, like, there's all these like what ifs. What if they say no? It's going to be like a blow to my ego and blah, 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 blah. Like what's some recommendations from your side on kind of getting over some of those fears about asking people for money?
Okay. So I'm going to totally answer the question, but I'm going to do so in a little bit of a roundabout way.
Go for it.
Because if there is significant hesitancy around asking someone to pay you for something, more often than not, that's a symptom that you haven't communicated really high value. So our clients typically ask us, well, how much is this going to cost before we ever ask for the sale? And here's why, is we follow a conversation framework. It's really simple. If I had a whiteboard, I could draw it out for your listeners. But it's actually it's a resource I can send to you and offer to your listeners as well. Yeah. That we offer.
Yeah,
we absolutely have a conversation framework that really it communicates high value, and it does so in such a way where there isn't a lot of pressure, high pressure close, and it often ends with, yeah, so how does that work and how much does it cost? And so it starts with, again, from your prospect's point of view, getting into their head, what are they trying to accomplish? And so you make a statement around, hey, listen, in talking to other folks like you, they're typically trying to accomplish X, Y, and Z, or A, B, C. However, they're challenged with, and then you hold out to the prospect the typical challenges in the space that you solve for. Beyond just stating their challenges or typical challenges, you then speak to the impact of those challenges, what we were just talking about. What does it mean that they can't do the thing that you help them do? And then this is an amazing thing. It's a bit of behavioral psychology. You guys would be so well off to understand this and to use this in your conversations. You've painted this really bleak picture. You're trying to do this, but you can't. And the reason you can't is because of this problem, and this problem. And here's what it means. And you elaborate on that as much as you can. But before you ever talk about who you are and what you do, you let the prospect live in the impact of those challenges and ask them this question. Hey, that's what we're hearing. I'm curious, what does that look like in your world? I'm curious, what does that look like in your business? I'm curious, what does that look like in your company? And then what the prospect will often do is feed back to you the biggest pain point that they're experiencing, and empathize with that, feel that, go with them. Wow. So what's the impact on you? What's the impact on your employees? What's the impact on your family that you can't do that? And before, in what a lot of people, they resist, the tendency is to, hey, this is bad, but I can help with that. Hey, this is bad, but we can help with that. Don't do that. Just, it's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's really, really bad. And here's the key is because the human brain perceives value in a contrasting worldview. The greater the contrast between their world without you and their world with you, the greater that contrast, the higher the perceived value. So it's bad, bad, bad. And then you land it with a question that might sound something like this. Hey, I know that's what's going on today. What if you could do this differently? Imagine if you could do this. It's the Steve Jobs keynote. What if you could do this? You can. It's called an iPhone. And so we have closed a lot of business without mentioning our company name. And the reason we do that is because we can speak to the prospect's goals, speak to the prospect's challenges, speak to the impact of those challenges, and then offer them a series of what if or imagine if you could statements to let them live in the contrast, their world without us and their world with us. And then we'll land it with something like this. And your listeners can do the exact same thing. They could say something like, hey, listen, what if you could do this? What if you could do that? Well, you can. That's how we helped XYZ company achieve a very similar outcome. And here's the deal. If you've had that conversation correctly, the next question out of your prospect's mouth will be something like this. Wow. Okay. So how does that work? Or, well, how much is that going to cost me? And then it's at that point, it's not a hard close. It's just a straight up, well, you know, it's this much. And we'd love the opportunity to work with you guys.
So
where do I sign?
Yeah, here's my credit card.
Exactly.
No, exactly. That's awesome. Is there, I feel like part of the issue is just that I'm trying to like put myself in the position of like somebody just starting out and like some of the obstacles they would face when going through this process. I would think that it would just be the confidence side of it, right? Am I worth as much as I should charge to make it worth my time? Especially in the beginning when maybe it's their first client, maybe it's just their second client. And can I've identified my ideal client, so I know I can provide this person value, but I'm just not confident in my worth. I think that's probably a good way put it. Now, either do you have any comment on that, or do you have a resource or a book that may help someone if that is a struggle that they have?
So I don't have a resource or a book, but I do have a little bit of understanding from the way I built my first business and the way that we built Master Messaging. And initially, here's what we started with: a conviction that we could really help people. That's what it started with. That's all it was. It was a conviction because we had
like
no
self-belief,
an understanding, a belief that, man, you know, if we could work with a sales organization, we can help them with our training, with our playbooks, our messaging. And so we did some free or steeply discounted work at the very onset to prove the concept. And now, but here's, and it, well, I don't want to do anything for free. Well, you're not doing something for free. You're actually paying for a case study. You're actually paying for a proof case. And so when you have that case study, when you have that proof case, when you have that client testimonial, you've got everything you need at that point to determine the value of this thing that, or the service that you're offering. And so I would recommend the first couple times, I'm not saying don't go into debt, charge these initial couple of clients, charge them the bare minimum for them to say yes to the agreement, to get a proof case, to get a testimonial. And we actually did that to a couple of our clients. We said, hey, listen, we're just getting started. We don't have a lot of client history. We're going to do this for you. We're going to do it for you for absolutely our rock bottom minimum price. All that we ask is that if pleased, you'd provide a detailed testimonial. And so you could essentially, what you're doing, they're paying you in a testimonial. And I want to say this, we have one of our clients who went with us on a process that we were just trying out initially. And it was a product and a process we were developing. They took a risk with us. We charged them bare minimum, but we got a brilliant case study that we've been able to hold out dozens of times since then. And it's landed us a lot of business. So I would just encourage, I'd encourage your listeners, do what it takes to get the proof source, the case study. This is what was happening with them before engaging us and look at where they're at today and get it in writing and get it in recording. And then that's what you're able to hold out to all your new prospects to set the true value of what you offered. Let your clients tell you what you're worth.
Yeah. Yeah. I was at a mastermind here in Atlanta 3 weeks ago now, I guess it was. And one of the speakers there, he's actually from Atlanta. Most of the people are not from Atlanta, but this guy was from Atlanta. He, for those listening, both myself, Ryan, and the Ryan that we're chatting with here, we're both from Atlanta. So this gentleman, his name's Aaron Wang. He's from, he lives over in Brookhaven, and he's a high ticket copywriter, basically. And so he writes webinars and things like that for marketers and businesses. Charges, I think he said $10,000 per PowerPoint presentation that he puts together for you. And his website was isaaronlegit.com. And he said you went to it and all you saw on there was a picture of him, like a headline and like 30 testimonial videos. And that's all that was on. That's the website that was on his business card. And you went to it and it was just like 30 videos of people talking about how great he was.
Brilliant. Yeah. I love that. No, that's a great idea. What, but that's something that anyone can do. You know, cover your costs. Don't go into debt. But understanding what you're doing by offering this quote discount, it's not really a discount. It's more like bartering, you know, and they don't have to come up with money. But what they do need to produce, if happy, is a testimonial. Even better, get it on video. If you can get a video testimonial, this is something great idea that we've seen some of our clients have used. They'll get their clients on video testifying to the effectiveness of the product or service that they're using, that they're offering. That case study will tell you the true value of what you offer. Mm-hmm. And so one of our clients came back and says, wow, I mean, our first call conversion rates were 8%. In one quarter, you lifted them to 47%. That had a dramatic impact on their revenue. We saw that this process and this product that we developed was incredibly valuable. So I have zero hesitation at this point because I have an inner belief and conviction right now that, man, we can move that number. And if we move that number, what does that mean to you? For some of our clients, that equals millions of dollars. So for us to come asking, you know, low five figures, or, you know, for something like that, that is not, I'm sorry. And so I've actually asked our clients, would you spend $10,000 to make 250 grand?
Yeah.
I think most people would say yes to that.
Yeah, for sure. So is there any, we've talked a lot about, you've mentioned it several times here, like the psychology of sales, like behavioral psychology, things like that. Are there any good resources or books that you would recommend somebody go on Amazon right now and pick up that would give them a good insight into this that would help them out if they are either selling a product or selling a service or a course or anything?
Yeah, some of the best books that have been written recently along these lines, I would say anything written by Chip and Dan Heath is just absolutely brilliant. Marketers, salespeople, entrepreneurs, Chip and Dan Heath, and any of their stuff is fantastic. Made to Stick is a fantastic book. Anything written by Daniel Pink. Daniel Pink has some absolutely brilliant materials. Regarding the sales and psychology, there's a book. It's a really hard read, but if you can get through it, you would get some amazing stuff. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And that's where we got the understanding that value is perceived in a contrasting worldview. It's in that book. Really hard read, but absolutely brilliant stuff on how the people you're talking to perceive the value of what you offer, which is for anyone with a product or service, you've got to understand that. How are people interpreting that?
No, that's awesome. So anybody interested, I'll link all those books or authors and a couple of their books up in the show notes below, and you can check those out. And Ryan, where can people take a look at you, find you, or find Masters Messaging on the interwebs?
Oh, yeah. So it's pretty simple. Mastermessaging.com. If any of your listeners, if you guys are out on LinkedIn, look me up, Ryan Law. And Master Messaging here in Atlanta. Happy to connect with you. And I tell people all the time, I'm never too busy to take a quick call or go back and forth on email or instant message on LinkedIn. Love growth hacking businesses. Love kicking around ideas for how to grow companies and grow businesses. It's a real passion of ours. Would love to interact with you guys in whatever way, shape, or form you determine.
Awesome, man. This was a great conversation. We went back and forth on this a few times to get it lined up. We both kept having something come up, but I'm super glad we actually got it to work out with both of our schedules. And thanks a ton for hanging around with me and the Hustle to Freedom audience. I think everyone's going to get a ton of value out of this. So thanks a ton.
Man, my pleasure. Happy to be with you.
Cool, man. Talk soon. And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So, if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.